Oh my goodness. They have new ones of Meryl and this little mouse. Oh dear. Oh dear.
I know. It's the problem.
I need it. How
I'm in
fast will you bring
danger.
it? I'm in danger. Is that a baseball?
Yeah, so they're like
Oh
random objects with like little smiley faces and feet, and they're
my
so
God.
cute.
I want this peach.
I like the sun one, and the little marshmallows are so cute.
I want this little peach so bad. Oh my God.
Oh, so cute.
I wish I had a little booty. That would make it 10 times better. Oh my goodness. I do like these.
It's bad, isn't it?
Want this
No.
little egg. Oh my
The eggs are cute.
God. Why is there a bride and groom egg?
I honestly have no idea.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Blair.
And I'm Kirsten, and we are
Mediocre
Content.
Content.
And I'm sorry if you can hear Puma complaining underneath my feet. She's upset.
Oh, yes.
She does the circle thing. She likes to circle around the chair, tell me if she wants to come up, and then not come up.
She's like a shark.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I feel as if I'm in very much danger.
I am in danger.
Ma'am. Now she's just messing with my stuff in protest.
Oh my God.
I have like bags back there and they'll pray.
Salem is out of the room now. He was
Oh,
here a minute ago.
disappointing.
And Jinx is downstairs, I believe.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're just, you know, I think the problem is they're so antsy. And I know we're both moving at the same time ish, but like the cats are like climbing over the boxes. They want to be in every bag. They're exploring every new surface. And I'm like, if y'all get stuck back there and I can't get to you because of the mound of crap I have, that's going to be a problem for both of us.
This is my philosophy with cats. If they get themselves in there, they need to be able to get themselves out, or they'll learn how to get themselves out, because this is not a fire cat stuck in tree rescue situation.
It's very true. My favorite part is when Lynx dives off of something and then uses his talons to claw into my vacuum seal bags. That's my favorite.
No. Oh my God. I was vacuum sealing some stuff the other day, just like clothes and stuff that we're never going to use in Hawaii. I'm like putting stuff in. Meanwhile, Salem's at the other end of the bag, just chomping down. And I'm like, sir,
it's so rude.
And I like it ruins the vacuum seal, obviously.
Obviously, but the snow skin off his back. Oh. Yep, every time. It's between that and the boxes, because they all want to rub their face on the corners of the boxes. And so by the time I go to like tape the boxes, it's soggy, dilapidated, half chewed. And I'm like, this is delightful. My favorite part.
The movers are going to come and they're going to be like, what happened here?
What kind of animal do you have, lady?
Right.
I have three and they're all crazy.
They're piranhas. I don't know what to tell you.
Puma the piranha. That's
Yeah. I have. So Salem, I have, is our dog, right? Because he fetches and like does
links
general dog things. And then Jinx, it turns out, is not a cat like I had originally suspected.
So weird.
He is a chinchilla.
Oh my
fact,
God.
Because there is a dirt patch in our backyard. And when I let him outside, he does a little dirt bath. He like
That's
goes
gross.
Right out there. He rolls around. He like kicks his little feet. He's like, could not be happier. And then he comes inside and gets dirt everywhere.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. It reminds me of that girl that does, frick yeah, concrete. The dirt. Ma'am, stop. Your claws are so sharp. Love you so much. Okay, bye-bye.
Love you so much.
Any hoodle. That's what's happening. It's just cat chaos. That's just what it is.
It is. It's
just my life.
The joys of being a cat owner. And I wouldn't trade it for the world, honestly.
No. I don't think this house needs anything else right now, because the three of them is significantly enough.
Yeah.
Consistently.
So outside, some more cat content, just because we need to add it in here.
Yeah.
So one of the surgery centers that I worked at, we rotate through a bunch of different ones, but the one of them has a family of cats living in the parking lot.
Oh,
and they're so cute. And they like, it gets hot.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so yeah. they get underneath the cars. And so we, I like always check my car before we,
right.
know,
yeah.
before I go anywhere or before I leave for work. But they, in especially in the mornings, like when it's really early, they'll be out in the parking lot, just like chilling and having a little family meeting. It's so cute. There's like at least two kittens, one grown cat. I've seen a couple other like random ones, but they're all like, one of them's a tabby. The other one's a tuxedo. There's a couple of orange cats roaming around. It's very cute. And I am so tempted every time that I go there to just
we'll take you
them.
Home. That's what I wanted to do when we lived in Pensacola, because there was a restaurant that always had a pregnant mama or like a mom that just had babies. Mm-hmm. And they, it's like a great place because first of all, it's a restaurant that serves fish and food. So they would always get scraps of things. But second of all, it was so cute. The babies were just so teeny tiny.
I know.
I'm going to take them all. But anyway, the feral cat population is good because it keeps other rodents down, but it's also sad because I want all of them.
Apparently, it's not good for the bird population.
No,
though.
It is not.
So it's a give and take situation, I think.
Yeah, exactly. You got to have that balance. Didn't we talk about keystone species at one point?
We did. We did indeed.
Because scientists.
Yeah. There was one other thing I was going to tell you. And I'm trying to think of it right now. It was the cats at work. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then I like at least once a week, I have a really good conversation about cats with one of my patients.
Oh,
because they just inevitably have a cat.
Of course.
And I'm like, I love my cats. And they're like, I love my cats too. I could never live without my cats. And I'm like, same. We have this in common. We're bonding. It's great.
I want to meet one person that doesn't say that about their cats. Like if you say that, you probably shouldn't have a cat. Or if you don't say that, you probably shouldn't have a cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are my and like bread and butter.
I think there's one caveat to that situation is like the dad that didn't want the cat who says they hate the cat but actually loves the cat.
Yeah, you have to put everything in quotations with that situation.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. I believe that those people are the exception to the rule.
My grandpa loved having Misty and Sylvie because at the old house because they would just sit on his lap when he would watch TV late at night. And that was his favorite thing. And so, unfortunately, when they had passed, that's when we first got Cougar. And Cougar would come and sit on his lap at night when we would take her down. And it was like, oh my gosh, just living his cat, his silent cat dreams.
Yes. Oh my God. I love that. Yes. I love that. Awesome. Chris's dad loved Salem when they came to visit. He even gave Salem a nickname. He would be like, Fluffy. Come here. And Salem would come running to him. Aww. It was so cute. But he like hated the cats that they like grew up with.
Hated I love them. That.
Absolutely. But loves Salem. Salem is the man.
My favorite thing is to see like new people that come in and see the cats, like who they choose to bond with immediately.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, you know, Cougar, she is so picky, but here recently, anybody like our sweet cleaning person, she goes right up to her like, hey girl, welcome. And I'm like, who is this cat? Like, so nice to have you in my home. Please.
She knows the cleaning lady. She's like, this lady is good for me.
You know what it is? I think it's because the cleaning lady's name is Kristen and it's very close to Kirsten. And I feel like that's why.
Yeah. Okay. I
don't
that.
Mean to say that she has a name preference, but also our cat sitter's name is Christine and she loves her too. So,
well, we,
it's just a weird trend.
That is a weird trend. And I fear that you are hiring people with the same name as you. And that's weird.
I didn't realize it till just now.
But we all know that deep down Cougar is a daddy's girl.
Oh my God. She is a Tyler through and through.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fairness, we're all just second potato to Tyler. Mm. And we take our job very seriously.
That's right.
Anyway.
That is right.
So what we don't take seriously is our pod.
That's right.
Clearly.
But we can force our listeners to listen to us ramble about our cats for 20 minutes. So that's
what
nice.
Else are you going to do? You know,
literally nothing. All right. So I'm going to disclaim really quick because that's my job. And
She we're gets talk- not paid to do that.
We are talking about eyeliner today, which I fear we are experts on. Just saying.
I hate to say it, but mine always ends up in my eyebrow.
Well, I feel like we have some experience in this particular
realm. We do.
Unlike a lot of our other material.
That's
so
fair.
If you've come to the podcast to get any kind of advice, don't do that. But we are the place to learn about things that you may not know about. We're going to give some eyeliner recommendations for sure. maybe. Kirsten, with that sus laugh, I'm going to give an eyeliner recommendation. So whatever. And now I'm going to talk to you about the good news, because I think that's all the disclaimer we need.
Okay. Go for it.
All right. So according to a poll, women are the unsung heroes of the grill. Yeah.
I am not. I hate grilling.
I neither.
That's good
I.
for you.
but I do watch the grilling, the female grilling content on TikTok. It's like the Blackstone.
Oh,
content.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
I count that as grilling. I don't know if it's different.
That counts. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I watch that because I like it. And it feels like doable, you know, it doesn't feel out of my reach.
Sure.
No.
Yeah.
So anyway, a survey of 2000 men and women revealed that 53% believe women are not receiving the notice or praise that they deserve for their grilling skills. Hmm. Yet the same goes for unappreciated men.
Okay.
half of the respondents, 55% were men and 47% were women, believed grilling is a male-dominated activity, but the majority, 53%, also agree that such notion is outdated. Mm-hmm. We love that. Mm-hmm. Indeed, the survey found that nearly half of the women said it's their time to shine at the grill this year, according to a survey conducted by Talker Research for Purdue. Regardless of who's doing the cooking, 74% believe that grilling is an art form, mm-hmm. and 84% agree that there's nothing better than a summer meal straight from the grill. I would agree with that.
I would also agree with that.
Those who grill often said the top reason they enjoy it is that grilled foods are some of their favorite to eat. They also like the opportunity to get outside, and mm-hmm. that generally grilling puts them in a good mood. The random double opt-in survey also explored what foods respondents rate as must-haves when grilling in the summer. Burgers topped the list at 72%, followed by hot dogs, 60%, with steak rounding out the top three at 59%.
I'm here for the grilled corn.
Meat stayed in the top five, as chicken breasts, ribs were also voted the next two in the list must-haves. Mm. Quote, if women are the unsung heroes of the grill, chicken is the underdog of the grilled proteins, said Jody Hallman, VP of marketing and at the family-owned Purdue company. And we believe grilling is an equal opportunity activity that all members of the household should enjoy.
I'd agree. The good thing with those ladies that are doing the Blackstone grilling is that they do breakfast for six on the Blackstone or uh-huh. something like that. Uh-huh. And it's just so like cozy watching them cook, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like I enjoy watching people cook. I hate cooking myself for the most part.
I agree.
I do enjoy the potato and carrot packs with like hot dogs and stuff like that.
So yeah.
I'm down for that.
I don't know why the Blackstone just seems like easier than like a traditional grill. I don't know why I feel that way. It just looks easier. I don't
know.
Maybe
like
it's
a hibachi grill.
Maybe it's because it's not like a grated surface.
Right.
It's flat. And that's why I like it. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't really enjoy fire in general. So the Blackstone's much better for me mentally.
Yeah, no, I agree. I hate our gas stove because fire.
Yes, me too. I grew up with electric. That's
Same.
All I know. And I am so uncomfortable on a gas stove.
And look, I know that the cooking nerds out there are going to be
sure.
like, you know, gas is better because it more evenly heats your pot or like whatever it is. I don't know.
Sure.
But like, I'm not about it.
No. And also, do you know how many times I've seen recently where people's houses are exploding because of gas leaks? Absolutely
right.
not.
Well, and they say that your gas stove is like
constantly leaking gas throughout the day, like just a like little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives, it's puts people at higher predisposition for like asthma and like respiratory problems.
Yeah, I'm all set. Thanks. I'll just plug mine in.
That's right. I agree. The second one I have for you is old art, is what I've titled it.
I like it.
In 2021, GNN reported that, not to be confused with CNN, reported that a painting of a Swalwesi warty pig, sorry, on the island of,
I think it's Sulawesi.
Sulawesi, there we go. Yeah. Sulawesi. I'm making it too difficult.
Yeah.
Sulawesi in Indonesia had become the oldest cave painting ever discovered, dating back to 45,000 years.
Nice.
Not only has the record been broken with another painting on the same island, but the new discovery also sets the record for the oldest narrative story depicted through art. A hunting scene featuring human bird hybrids. Ew. Human bird hybrids. So it's sci-fi. Is that what we're talking
about? Okay.
Hybrids from 49,000 BCE. The painting was originally discovered in 2017 when scientists at the Griffith University in Australia were surveying caves on the eastern Indonesian island of, say it again, Kirsten.
Sulawesi.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
With the hopes of using a novel method of producing a date called laser ablation, U-series imaging, with the U short for uranium.
Ooh.
The island's special climate and topography have allowed these cave paintings and the pigments to create them cave paintings and the pigments used to create them to survive tens of thousands of years longer than cave art found in other countries like Europe and Australia. Water leaking through the karst rock that forms the cave creates little popcorn-like buttons called calcites, which protect the pigments like icing on a sponge cake.
Nice.
The laser is shined through the calcites and is able to measure the age of the agglomeration of the initial calcite layer, the one closest to the paint. With this technique, the scientists were able to reassess dates and paintings surveyed earlier, producing new estimates that were at 4,000 years older than previously thought.
This is crazy.
What's come about as a result of the humans who lived on the
Sulawesi
were practicing painting for purposes of ceremony rather than passing time over 50,000 years ago. Quote, they were not common living spaces. Renaud Jones Boyu, about that if I pronounced the name wrong, said of the caves, which were difficult to reach. The co-author of the study published Wednesday in the journal Nature, believes that the caves were places that humans would go for a purpose and is probably linked to some sort of ceremony. The enigmatic scene depicted on the wall is believed to represent a hunting narrative, but one born of imagination rather than reality. obviously because of the human bird like figures, I imagine.
It seems legit.
The figures imply that the artwork reflects imaginative storytelling rather than recording fact, as it's believed in the case of some cave art, which shows which animals could be hunted in which areas.
Oh,
yeah. That's cool. Quote, that is something new, something very important, something mm-hmm. that happened much older than we thought.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I mean, it's going to be better than whatever I draw. That's for sure. Hashtag not an artist.
Not an artist.
By any means. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I also saw this story recently and I was like, that's really neat that we're still finding things that are older and older. Also, I saw, you never know with AI these days, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I saw this TikTok And the reason that I'm thinking about it is because you said they were the bird humanoid kind of figures, but there was a picture of what looked to be an archaeological site, potentially in a cave or like underneath the world somewhere. And it looked like these statues of almost alien-like creatures that had almost like a beak, kind of. Mm-hmm. And they were huge. Like if you saw the person, it was like looking at one of those people that are standing beside the giant redwoods. Mm-hmm. Like that's what it looked like. That's how big they were. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, are these real? I don't know.
There's no, I mean, I would think that they would have more press about it if it
maybe
was.
Maybe it would be cool. I want to see the weird bird people underneath the water or underneath the earth. That'd be cool.
Bottom line, fact check everything.
Yeah, just, definitely.
This is your reminder to make sure that to assume everything mm-hmm. is AI until proven innocent.
That's very true. Well, some things we do know a lot about, to Blair's credit, previous to the good news, is makeup, eyeliner included. And we are definitely not the first people to invent eyeliner. We are not the first people to use blush. And so today we're going to talk about the history of cosmetics and also talk about some of our favorites at the end. And I just want to say before we do anything, I feel like I have to say it, none of it's sponsored. So if we talk about a product later, if we talk about a product throughout the pod, we're not sponsored by any of these products. This is just stuff that we use on the daily. And we don't actually, well, I don't actually wear makeup that much. I don't think Blair really does either. Like
yeah,
here
I mean,
and there.
I wear a little bit to work. I'll talk about it when we get there.
But, yeah. Right. Yeah. So it's not like we're wearing full Beats every day. No. And I work from home, so that would be silly. But anyway, that's what we're going to do. We're not sponsored by any of them. And so let's get our story started. 10,000 BCE, shall we? They were started by the Egyptians. That's just that's how we got there.
Yes, Cleopatra slay. Yes.
If you don't know the history, Egyptian culture, they were very much into the art of painting the face for, you know, both ritual as well as potentially recreational. But this was also part of other things that they were very into, like hygiene and health and those kinds of aspects. And it didn't just pertain to women. Men and women would both partake in even things like scented oils and ointments to clean and soften the skin or mask body odor. So a perfume, which we have done an episode on perfume. So if you want to check that out, it's on our YouTube because I think it was a stream. But anyway, all of those things to say, oils and creams were often used for those purposes, as well as to protect against the Egyptian sun and dry winds. So maybe even like a prehistoric sunscreen of sorts. There were myrrh, thyme, marjoram, chamomile, lavender, lily, peppermint, rosemary, cedar, rose, aloe, olive oil, sesame oil, and almond oil that would provide the basic ingredients of such perfumes in Egyptian culture, including in their religious rituals. So that's kind of where cosmetics starts. And they've put like those things all under the same umbrella. Because if you research cosmetics, they include skincare, they include sunscreens, they include body oils, like it's all under the same thing.
Yeah.
So then from 4000 to 3000 BCE, here are some of the highlights. Makeup was used by the upper class to decorate a person's eyes and set them apart from the lower classes. During this time, men and women of the upper class would wear the makeup daily, and the first makeup colors to be widely used were black and green. These eye shadows were used mining lead and copper ore, so probably not the best to put on your face, but what else did you have? You know?
Yeah, it's not like makeup forever. Sit here and be like, how would you like this pigmented? Like,
ColourPop has a new drop in Egypt.
Right. Yeah. In 4000 BCE.
Yeah, you know how it is. And so Egyptians would call this kohl, of course, because it would be used to, it's like coal, like the black of coal.
It's spelled like the department store.
Yes,
kohl. Very funny.
But it would outline the eyes and also an almond shape. The kohl was kind of a powdery consistency and would, of course, be applied with a stick. So like your normal eyeliner, we have brushes on the end of ours now. And then also around that time frame, China was staining their fingernails with things like gum arabic, gelatin, beeswax, and egg. And the colors there were representations of social class as well. The Zhou dynasty royals would wear gold and silver, with subsequent royals wearing black or red, and lower classes forbidden to wear bright colors on their nails at all. So it was also kind of like that class structure. In Greece, women would also paint their face specifically with white lead, also not great, and apply crushed mulberries as rouge, which was very inventive.
Yeah.
They were also doing fake eyebrows made of oxen hair. So instead of getting their lashes done, they would just have ox hair, you know, stuck to their eyebrows.
Wow.
For a better bush on their face, I guess.
I will say, this is a side tangent, kind of, but it's related, I promise. So I just watched the Dallas Cowboy cheerleader documentary on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And one of the episodes, they have Dolly Parton come as part of their like halftime show thing. And apparently in Dolly Parton's book, she says that she used to crush up when she was little. She would like crush up mulberries and like use them as blush on her cheeks. And then she would use like a matchstick when it was like cold and use it as like eyeliner.
So inventive.
I know. She's a queen.
She is a queen.
I just thought that was relevant.
Look, the traditions are, if you have to use what you're surrounded by is
totally,
I think, the point of all of that. And to Dolly too, if you're into it, you've got to find a way to like make it happen. And that's what they, and that's also why, of course, they put things that we know now are unsafe to put on your face.
Right.
Because they didn't know, but they were using what they had. And it's true, even in 1500 BCE, there was both Chinese and Japanese citizens who would use rice powder to white out their faces. I mean, a lot of people think of the geisha culture, that they would white out their faces, and they would have very direct color put in certain spaces, like around their eyes or lips would be red, and you'd have the dark coal eyebrows, like very
Mulan.
Specific. Yeah, Mulan. Mm-hmm. And she's from China, so that makes perfect sense. So you want to highlight the main features of your face. That's how they would do it. They would also shave off their eyebrows. They would paint their teeth gold or black, and then henna dyes were applied to stain hair and faces. So you could dye your hair if you want. But it was all a way to show different aspects of yourself and highlight the areas that were at the time most considered most beautiful.
Right. Yeah.
And then
beauty is a social construct, everybody.
It really
just
is.
Your friendly reminder.
And it's funny because it started with class recognition, and I feel like it's still in its own way kind of revolves around that. Obviously there's more affordable ways to do it now, which is great, but if you can afford to wear makeup even now, it does kind of like put a marker like, oh, you're in a certain bracket, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Not that that's appropriate. I'm just saying like that's what you can say to a point, like
you know
what I'm saying.
No, I got it. I got it.
Like, I'm not paying for Larimar. Like, that's too expensive.
La Mer.
Also, just a couple of hundreds of years later, the Grecians would whiten their complexion with chalk or lead face powder. So now we've transitioned from like goo. And then fashioned crude lipstick from ochre clays laced with red iron. So now we're putting iron in our mouth.
Love it.
And iron's good for you in moderation. 100 CE, because Rome can never be outdone, people would put barley flour and butter on their pimples and sheep fat and blood on their fingernails for polish. Ew. And then in addition, mud baths would become most popular, with some Roman men dyeing their hair blonde even. They had a lot of different things going on in Rome. They're like,
I love that for them.
Greece is like, yeah, we're just going to take our time and put iron on our lips. And Rome is like, no, we're going to 10 times that.
Watch
me. 300 to 400 CE, henna is used in India, both as hair dye and in the Mindy art, which is like the very beautiful. You'll see a lot of the bridal hands and feet that they do. It's absolutely gorgeous, but that's plant-based as well. Specifically often used for Hindu weddings, and then also in some North African cultures, apparently, which is very cool. And so that is kind of how it got its roots. We see a lot of different kind of babies of now more modern products. So it's not even just like lipstick. It's like, oh, now we have nail polish. Now we have like acne solutions. We have sunscreen solutions, hair dye. And all of that set the stage for how the kind of Renaissance Middle Ages went and where it evolved and how that then translated to the Victorian era, which is what we're going to talk about next.
Yay.
So 12 to 1300, perfumes were imported to Europe from the Middle East as a result of the Crusades. Crusades, sad. Perfumes, happy. In Elizabethan England, hair dye was very fashionable, specifically red hair dye. And society women would also egg white their face to create the appearance of paler complexions. However, some people did believe that cosmetics generally would block proper circulation and pose a health threat. So there were kind of like mixed reviews as this stuff was coming of age.
That's so fun.
Isn't it? Isn't it? We were big thinkers.
That is crazy. I mean, not crazy because right. At the time, how would you know? You wouldn't.
How would you know?
Yeah. But that's such an interesting school of thought.
I know.
Love that so much. Also, I think it's comical how up until a certain point, up until probably like the 80s or 90s, maybe, no, I would say maybe like up until maybe the 70s, we'll say, being pale was considered a good thing. And then from the 70s onward, we're like, how tan can we get without getting skin cancer?
For literally, real.
Like, why?
It's true.
Why? It's so crazy. And I vividly remember we're sitting in, like, I don't know if you remember this at all, but we were sitting in intro to biology in Guyon Hall. And Dr. Morrissey comes in and he's like, okay, so basically the beauty standard, because we were talking about, I don't even remember what we were talking about, but we were talking about like how the UV rays from the sun are like compared to like microwaves and like thing, you know, like whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
You're talking about like spectrum of light, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Or like photosynthesis or something.
Sure.
And he was like, the beauty standards of today want you to have, be so tan that you get skin cancer. And also so skinny that you like, don't have any muscle mass, and both of those things are terrible for you, so like don't do that.
It's very
or something true. Like that. It was very like impactful at the time, and I was like, you're but like he's like, scientifically that doesn't make any sense.
No, none at all.
And I'm like, you're so right.
It is so right. And it is funny how the different trends are like waving through the centuries as well.
Yeah,
because I also know, like, not only were they pale or trying to be pale, but they were dyeing their hair red. And if you know anything about gingers, they just come out pale and red. And that's just correct. Part of being married to one. It's very true. Yeah. And it's interesting how it transitioned from like, oh, you should have big, bold, aggressively colored hair to, no, let's just bleach the color right out of it. And now everyone needs to be a platinum blonde and you can't have your roots show and you have to have, because I remember there was a huge trend of like going blonde for everyone in like the last 5 or 6 years. Like, yeah. Not that that's bad. It's just interesting the trends that are happening.
Right. No, exactly. And I feel like, just being, well, and like up until a certain point, being blonde was like considered like scandalous.
It wasn't a good thing
necessarily. Today it doesn't really matter. No. I don't think. You could have purple hair and people won't even bat an eyelash, but like,
it's true.
It's just interesting how the school of thought changes throughout the years.
And I love seeing it even that far back.
Well, and even so like, even like the women in the Renaissance paintings, like all the girls out there now saying like, I would have been a great model for the Renaissance paintings. I'm like, girl, same.
Yes.
Like,
exactly. Cause everything changes. Yeah. And it just, it's all about the trends, and it's all, to your point, it's like a social structure, like the social structure just changes and the ideals change. And so like what's in and what's out kind of changes. Doesn't make, you know, anything right or wrong. It's just interesting.
Right.
Yeah. And it's, and it keeps going. So just again, another, what is it? Like another 100 to 200 years after that, the rest of Europe was also trying to get on board with a lot of those trends as well. Mm-hmm. So Italy and France, of course, would kind of emerge. And even now, I would say they were the epicenter of a lot of cosmetic industry, especially when you think about the Chanel brands or some of the more like lavish name brands that then branched out from clothing and designer to the cosmetic and perfume industry.
Yeah.
And a lot of that started around that 1400 to 1600 era. And only the aristocracy had access. Because again, it's a class thing. Even now, it's expensive.
Yep.
And getting materials is expensive because we've talked about spices, I think, before on multiple occasions and how expensive spices were because you have to import and export. However, some decisions in this time frame that they were like, oh, we'll just move from this to this. Not necessarily better, because we just talked about how the fact that they used to use lead face powder and they were like, oh, that's not good. No, no, no. Let's use arsenic now. And so now that was the trend that they would use for their face powder. And then also, like we just talked about, fragrances, the early ingredients would evolve in France and Italy, and later chemical processes would, you know, be able to do that less labor intensively. And so that took off. But we're still using arsenic and lead and iron in a lot of our stuff.
Well, because those are raw materials.
Yes.
And we didn't have any way to process them to make them safer. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And if you read about that time period, you'll also see the sad effects that happened to a lot of the women as a result of that. I think personally that female hysteria had a lot to do with the cosmetics of that time. Anyway, European women.
A hot take.
We're just going to leave that there. But again, on the lightening of the skin, they would use lead paint instead of powder. So they would just, instead of making it that powder consistency, they would turn it into a liquid, which is even better. And then Elizabeth I of England is actually well known for this because she created a look that they deemed the mask of youth. Blonde hair would also rise in popularity to be considered more angelic. They would have, they would have mixtures of black sulfur, alum, and honey to paint onto the hair and lighten with sun exposure. So your early spray-in, like suntan for your hair.
Just wait till you get to hydrogen peroxide, sweetie. It's going to be great.
Don't you worry, girl. And so a lot of the things that we see in more modern times, just processed instead of the raw materials that not all processed materials are any better than the raw, but it is what it is.
I mean, at least we have an ingredients list now. It's you can pick your poison, right?
It's very true. And then from there, the Victorian era really took care of everything else thereafter. So 1800, zinc oxide would be used as a facial powder, which would, you know, reduce the use of deadly mixtures of lead and copper, thank God. And then one such mixture, which was ceruse, which is made from white lead, is later discovered to be toxic and blamed for the health problems, including facial tremors, muscle paralysis, and unaliving, unfortunately. So they were starting to see the fruits of their labor in a very real way. And they were like, we got to find something safer. Queen Victoria publicly declared makeup improper during this era as well. So now we're getting on both sides of the fence of trends. During this time, cosmetic use was specifically linked to female actresses and prostitutes. So, you know, people were beginning to cherish natural skin colors without any makeup altering or, you know, using things that could introduce promiscuous kind of intentions on your face and outer place. I don't know. This is kind of weird. But with that, women would also just tweeze the crap out of their eyebrows during this time. They would also.
So it's like the 90s. But yeah.
Right. Exactly. they would massage castor oil into their eyelashes, which I think is actually something a lot of people
are
picking up today.
That's actually supposed to be good for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To help your eyelashes grow.
Exactly. And they would use rice powder to dust their noses, significantly safer than lead powder.
1000%.
They used beet juice or would pinch their cheeks to make them rosier. And clear pomade was used to essentially create a lip gloss, which is great. So the problem with this era is people like Queen Victoria were kind of back and forth. So the article that I had, it said that she said those things, that it was made for the more promiscuous women and women should just be out and being like whatever. But then she also, from what I understand, would commission specific makeup for herself. So
it's very dictator or not dictator, excuse me. Very queen, like ruler thing to do.
Yes, exactly. Like that's bad. I'll have four.
That's right.
In the 1880s, entrepreneurs would begin to produce their own lines of cosmetics to provide that more natural, no makeup look. That's currently trending now. And some of these new companies were small woman-owned businesses, which is fantastic because this was also a good opportunity for women in those eras to kind of take reins of something financial. And that typically used an agent system for distribution, and it was pioneered by the California Perfume Company, later rebranded as Avon, which I thought was so interesting.
Wow, interesting.
And this business model would allow women to make money independently, and also more women would start to earn their wages, buy their own cosmetics, enlarge that market, get people enticed and into it, not just as entrepreneurs, but as users of the makeup. And then women could live on their own, just trading business with owners and agents and factory workers with the products that were being produced, which was huge. Most of these entrepreneurs came from fairly humble origins, as you might think, and some managed to transform their local operations into full businesses with extreme distributions of their products. There was actually someone named Florence Nightingale Graham, who was the daughter of tenant farmers and worked extremely low-paying jobs prior to opening the beauty shop for elite clients. And she actually reinvented herself as the Elizabeth Arden, which is, if you don't know her, definitely do some research.
She was named Florence Nightingale first?
Yes. Rockin' name.
If y'all don't know, Florence Nightingale is actually a very famous nurse. She was the one who was like, hey, maybe we should wash our hands.
Thank God there was a woman around.
I just thought.
Wow. Her name was Florence Nightingale.
That's wild. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway.
And Elizabeth Arden is fantastic. She has had a cosmetic brand for a very long time. So check her out. Also, for African-American women, they found success through a similar model, but of course, unfortunately, during that time would face extra obstacles. Many white shop owners would refuse to consider stocking their beauty products, but it would be Madam C.J. Walker who would end up creating that demand through their own distribution channels and really taking off for the African-American cosmetics community, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Then in 1894, there was an extreme competitiveness to this industry, and it was driven by a group, New York perfumer Henry Daly, to found the Manufacturing Perfumers Association. And this group would evolve over time. And after several name changes, is now called Personal Care Products Council. And this is where you're starting to have regulations of materials that are going into cosmetics and are getting distributed to the masses. Because before that, they didn't really have a way to do that. You could just say, oh yeah, use this. And maybe it has arsenic in it. And you don't have a way to say, maybe that's not good for us to continue using, even if it's maybe a cheaper way to make it. Right.
Right. Right.
So this Personal Care Products Council would be in charge of reviewing and managing those kinds of issues as they came forward, which is great. And then the last piece is our modern-ish era. So the 1900s, which makes me really sad, the 90s, this time period is where a lot of other big names start to make their appearance. So for example, the number of U.S. firms manufacturing perfumery and other toiletry-like goods would increase from 67% in 1880 to 262 by this time frame. Mm. And by 1900, cosmetics are in widespread use around the world, including the U.S., of course. And that's why in 1907, Eugene Schuller, who was a young French chemist, would invent modern synthetic hair dye, which at the time he called Oriel. In 1909, Schuller names his company Société Française de Teintures. Doesn't matter. The point is, it's now called L'Oreal. You get the point.
Got it.
And so that obviously is a world brand. You can find L'Oreal products everywhere for hair care, especially in the United States. There's always like weird back and forth about whether you should use it, but I used L'Oreal when I was a kid and it was great. In Edwardian society, pressure increased on the middle-aged women to appear youthful while acting as hostesses was really big. And as a result, cosmetics would increase, but wasn't really popularized until beauty salons would begin to rise in popularity. And so while it wasn't widely accepted that you go to a salon and engage with all of this, many women didn't wish to publicly admit that they had assistance in achieving their youthful appearance. But at the end of the day, that's kind of where salons got their takeoff point. It was like these women who would go through the back door and be like, fix me. And then you would go out the front. And you're like, I'm beautiful.
Similar to how people have trouble admitting plastic surgery and Botox nowadays.
It's totally fine if you want to do that. Just be honest, you know? Yeah. It's fine. It's your choice. I agree. But that's kind of where that took off. So now you've got the products and you have a place, another place of business that I would argue is somewhat predominantly women run, that is getting cycled into society and being utilized for those purposes. 1919, Congress would pass the 18th Amendment in the Constitution, commonly known as Prohibition. As originally drafted, the amendment might have outlawed perfumes and toiletry goods because of their alcohol content. If you know anything about the Prohibition era, you'll know where that comes from.
That's rough.
And so the Manufacturing Perfumers Association, or MPA, mobilized its forces, which makes me chuckle a little bit, and persuaded Congress to clarify the language, which ended up exempting products that were unfit as beverages to be prohibited, which is very cool for a couple of reasons.
I think that that's reasonable.
It is reasonable, but also hilarious because number one, it still didn't stop people drinking. But also number two, people would just use other products to siphon the alcohol content out of the product.
It's correct.
And use it to drink. They would just filter it. Or they would have like backwater deals with the companies that were there producing it that had the alcohol to use and do that for those that were against the prohibition. It's just, you know, it's very fun facts.
living the dream.
For real. And then the 20s came along and society increasingly focused on the more sensual beauty of women. And as women would enter the professional world, they were actually encouraged to wear makeup to compete against men for jobs, essentially saying, I'm prettier than you and therefore deserve the job more than you.
This is why the patriarchy is so weird, because
it's so messed up.
At first, they're like, nah, fam, you need to be natural.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're going to fool me into loving you.
Yes.
And then now that they're like competing with them in the job market, you're like, okay, well, I need men to think to love me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wear makeup and be as pretty as possible. So that way they will hire me for this job.
You are correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's so
it's a mess.
It grinds my gears, man.
It is indeed a mess. And so because of that, if you look back at a lot of makeup trends that were happening around that time, we're talking full beat faces. These were heavily made up, defined cosmetic looks. There were Cupid bow shaped lips that would be painted on and rimmed. So now you've got the lip filler look without the need of lip filler, very pronounced Cupid's bows and thicker lips. The eyes, you got a lot of eyeliner. You want to accentuate those things. They got to look big and bold and beautiful. And you would have blush central. Like you want blush up the butt. Okay. You want blush everywhere it could possibly be. And so
yikes.
The 20s is often revered today as a vital part in that industry because of how many products had to evolve and be created to match that mindset shift.
And it wasn't just like it was a class thing anymore. Everybody Correct. Was doing it.
Because yeah. women were trying to get into the job force and compete against people that had been there forever and find their stamp, find their mark. Right. And that's, it had to change. Which is, on the one hand, you fight and, you know, you're like, oh, I have to fight for it. But on the other hand, it can't, like, we've walked away with a lot of really cool products and very, like, inventive ways of doing our makeup from there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Lipstick would be really popular after metal lipstick containers were invented because it was a safer way to keep it locked in as well. They were available as salves, liquids, stick forms, stains were most popular. Natural lip gloss was invented using bromo acid to create more of a red effect as it reacted with the skin. So pH balance or pH mm-hmm. products mm-hmm. came from there. Flavored lipstick, also very popular. Can you guess the most popular flavor?
It says cherry.
It is indeed cherry.
Yeah.
It was the most popular flavor of the time. And then, of course, blush. Like I said, we had blush from head to toe. It would replace the messier blushes.
Hold on. Hold
yes,
on.
Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
Can you imagine the first man to, like, taste the cherry lip gloss
right.
from his, like, significant other?
How hot is that?
That is so wild.
I think it's cute.
I think it's cute, too.
It's really adorable.
Just, like... Ladies, you want to blow his mind even more? Because, like, flavored lip gloss, that's amazing.
10 out of 10. We're happy with that.
I love that for them.
And so blush would end up becoming a cream, a powder, a liquid, paper. There were rouge papers, and you can actually see videos of things like this where people have found them from however many years ago. And yeah. So they would be inventing spill-proof containers for the blushes, which is good because you had to pay for it. You don't want to just waste it.
Yeah.
Mascara was also a big evolution during this time because women really wanted to accomplish that darker, fuller look. And so a lot of women would actually use, in order to get that, because at the time mascara hadn't evolved up until that point, to previously do that, they would take petroleum jelly, so Vaseline, and mix it with soot or coal. Not great for your eyes, but great for volume in the dark look. They would apply this gel to the lashes with a fine brush, so like a spoolie. And then by the mid-1920s, mascara was available in cake, which is very fun to look at, tube, wax, and liquid, and then applied with the quintessential spoolie brush. Eyeshadow kept the eyes dark. That's what they wanted. And initially, it was the first whole eye look would be edged and blurred with black coal eyeliner. Then the eyelid was painted in dark gray, turquoise, or green, which is why the 90s was interesting. And
the
then
first smoky eye.
I know, right? And then finally, it was popular to ink the eyebrows using black or brown eyeliner. So it was the now brow pencils that you're thinking mm-hmm. of, but we didn't have that. And then, of course, in that time frame, they were supposed to be very thin and dark and downward sloping to kind of, I think it was more to create more of a, oh, kind of face, like the yeah. soft kind
like
of
like sadness.
Yes.
From inside
like,
out.
Oh, I'm so melancholy. Yeah. Which was very different than just putting boar fur on your face for your eyebrows previously.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
And with all of that evolution comes a crash of sorts with the Great Depression. And that is where we will depressingly start during the second half.
Tired of dealing with lawn work in the sweltering heat of summer? Or maybe you're not a fan of being attacked by spiders while raking the leaves in the fall. I know I'm not. No matter what lawn and garden service you need, we have a solution for you.
If you live in the Richmond, Virginia area, KT Maintenance LLC is your one-stop shop for lawn care, brush removal, and even mulch and rock delivery. Whether you need commercial or residential services, each job gets a free estimate from owner and operator, Chris Thornton.
To get your free estimate today, call Chris at 804-986-8270 or send an email his way at katmaintllc@gmail.com and get your lawn and garden feeling fresh.
Welcome back. Prepare to be a little depressed. I'm sorry.
I was literally just about to say the same thing.
Prepare to be depressed. Ironically, it's not that bad for the makeup industry. It was bad for everyone else, which is terrible and frightening and horrible. But generally, we had a lot of development even here. So in the midst of the Great Depression, brothers Charles and Joseph Revson, along with chemist Charles Lockman, founded Revlon, which is just a play on Revson. Lockman and Revson. Yeah, oh. Like Revlon.
Oh, brother.
Anyway.
I mean, whatever, fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the reason they did this is they launched Revlon was because they discovered a unique manufacturing process for nail enamel, so nail polish, using pigments instead of dyes, which is probably overall better for your nails. Mm-hmm. And then this innovation was ultimately responsible for Revlon's overall success. It, of course, as we know, became a multi-million dollar corporation within 6 years, which is pretty impressive.
That is really impressive.
And they also borrowed the concept of something called planned obsolescence from General Motors Corp, totally different left field. And that introduced seasonal color changes. So this is when a company will develop products specifically with the intention to cause scarcity and therefore popularity. And we've talked about this on a lot of our Gotta Catch 'Em All series. So like the Squishmallows or even the Beanie Baby craze. This is when a company will specifically release a specific type of product that they carry, but mm-hmm. for a limited time, and you will never see it again. And this would create that market craze and make people a little insane when it comes to finding that. And until World War II, women tended to use an entire lipstick or bottle of nail polish before purchasing a new one. So a lot of the times, the company's like, no, I'm going to need you to purchase more than one at a time. And I don't really care if you go through it. So I'm going to make it so that you almost feel pressured to do so. Therefore, releasing those limited edition things, you're like, well, I'll never see it again. Even though I haven't finished this bottle, I need to go and buy that.
If just, your just grandparents fun. Have ever been like, why don't you just finish it before you're finish it before you buy a new one? That's the Depression era baby mindset.
Yes.
And a lot of the early boomers grew up in that time period.
Yep.
They didn't have like the raging capitalism that we are currently living in.
Or FOMO for that matter, because FOMO, you were right. worried about surviving. And Revlon said, hold my phone.
Correct.
Yes. Also, we have the reintroduction of Schuller, who did the whole L'Oreal thing, and he invented the first sunscreen, go us, and I say first lightly, because technically we heard previously that other societies and timeframes had a version of this, though its effectiveness is yet to be seen. And despite its relative ineffectiveness, even then, when it was first created, the development would lead to the invention of Glacier Cream by Austrian scientist Franz Greeter. Introduced in 1938, this product is cited as the first commercially viable sun protection cream. So competition's great. And in 1962, Greeter introduced the concept for the sun protection factor rating system. So you now have your SPFs, and that has since become the worldwide standard to measure that effectiveness. So even though the first one was like, nah, fam, the second one, 10 out of 10. With receipts.
So can we... Like, my parents were born in 1960 and 1961,
mm-hmm.
and they grew up, and they were like, we didn't have sun protection like you guys have now. I mean, so, but technically they did. It just wasn't very popular and nobody cared.
Exactly. Because it had just recently been kind of implemented. And that SPF was only recent as of 1962. So it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Cosmetics were excluded from the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906 because they were not considered a serious public health concern. However, this was debunked very quickly because there was an incident linked to the use of a specific eyeliner product that would force Congress to pass the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act, which greatly expanded FDA's authority to regulate cosmetics more productively. And I know people even say like the FDA is whatever, but they do what they can to make sure that what you're putting in your face and on your face for the most part isn't just going to come out here and like unalive you.
Correct.
That's their job. The 50s and 60s, women were beginning to use foundational cream. They would use a flesh colored setting powder, of course. This is what we're kind of used to now, or even now it's more like a translucent. So you're not putting color on color. Eye makeup was minimal, with just a little bit of eyeshadow applied. A lot of the colors were more warm and earthy and more of a matte texture. Mascara would be the proper way to say that, grew increasingly dramatic during this time. So they wanted that luxurious lash. It was definitely more full. It was also usually accompanied by winged or cat eyeliner, as it was a crucial look for the decade.
That's right.
Commercial eyeliner on the market was available as pencil, liquid, and gel forms. And of course, the possibilities for this look were endless. You could change the length, how thick it was, the color, the appearance on the eye or associated with the rest of the eye makeup was, you know, could change anything more dramatically. Eyebrows, thick. Thick.
Two C's.
Specifically in the inner corner. And then they would taper out to a very sharp, clean point. So now we've got thick in the front, thin in the bottom. And that's why a lot of women didn't have like half their eyebrow, because they would just pluck the crap out of it on the ends and never see it again. And then, of course, it was common that you would take the eyebrow you had, tweeze it clean, and then use a pencil to put back what you took off.
A lot of people still do that.
And in Hollywood, which everything was more dramatic in Hollywood, they would actually begin to taper the fall from the peak to the outer corner for more of that droopy look and mimic a pleasant, innocent smile, specifically around the mouth when they were doing lipsticks. Sultry movie stars such as Marilyn Monroe would overdraw their lip, which was not a new trend. It's just something that she made take off once again. And then hues of red, dark red, and blue red were the colors of the century, which I would say you could see in a lot of the old.
I would also like to say that blue red is not what you think it looks like. And also is the Taylor Swift lip, by the way.
And there is a difference between red, orange red, purple red, and blue red.
For those of you who are colorblind, I'm sorry. You won't know that.
You will not. You will just see a color.
But
yes,
there is a difference.
Yes. And blue red is what Taylor wears.
Is a Taylor red. Yeah.
1960s, they now went for the youths. The baby boomers were coming of age and defined the decade as their own. There was significant evolution of makeup during this time, with the feminist movement reemerging in the 60s, and they primarily focused on equality for all, of course. And so because of that, the feminists sometimes would use or view makeup as more of an objectifying product for women than it was, you know, like than it was for like fun and creativity. It was like, no, we're not objects. And so they would often wear very little.
I believe this is the first wave of feminism where they were like doing the bra burning and we hate men situation, which is no longer what feminism is.
Right. But it is that time frame.
That is the time frame. So just be aware of that.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, you know, obviously people were divided, even women. Like some people were like, no, I wear this stuff for me and I'm going to continue to wear it and it has nothing to do with being an object. And so they would just embrace the makeup and wear it if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And so because of this kind of back and forth on the scale of whether you should or shouldn't be wearing it, the fashion trends were crazy and mixed reviewed. So if you're thinking more of like a quintessential hippie kind of look where maybe you're a flower child, you've got more of that natural look. You're probably not wearing a lot of makeup, or if you are, it's as minimal at best.
I think Jenny from Forrest Gump is a really good depiction of that.
That is a great depiction of that. On the other side, more modern, high fashion individuals are like, no, I'm going full beat. I'm going dramatic. We're doing all different types of color combinations. We want a like dramatic black or even white and just make it completely crazy looking. Pastels to mark, you know, their fit. Like, it was just so different, the range of things that were happening during this time because of those movements. In the 70s and 80s, it was kind of, again, more of a diverse look. In the early 70s, you would have that flower power natural look. And then, of course, it would transition to be a little bit more glam. In this evolution, there were brands made specifically for women of color that were launched, which was fantastic. Specifically, Fashion Fair Cosmetics, they debuted in 1973. And then in 1974, Vogue was actually the first mainstream magazine to feature a Black model, who was Beverly Johnson, on their front cover for their cosmetics line.
Nice.
The 80s, of course, tons of crazy looks. I don't even need to describe the 80s to you. All you have to do is say 80s.
Can I just say, as a kid,
yes,
when I would look at like the 80s fashion, I was like, this is ugly. But as an adult...
You're like, wow.
I love the 80s because it's so wild.
It is.
It's just like there were no rules.
Nope.
And everyone was like, we're just going to put a bunch of color on our face.
Yes.
We're going to wear our shoulder pads.
Yeah.
And we're going to step it out. It's going to be great.
It was heavy. It was bold. It was colorful.
The hair.
Can we even... Hairspray was the ozone problem. Okay.
Yeah. The 80s are solely responsible for the hole in the ozone layer.
Sorry, Mom. Anyway, gone was this like little baby angelic, naturally light face. We are talking electric blue and orange is what we're doing. And this was because the trend was to look as extreme as possible. And we're talking the people in this era are Madonna, Cyndi Lauper. Okay. They were out, not just in fashion, but their makeup was very bold and very aggressive for the time. And of course, in Hollywood, a lot of the times the trends are kind of trending there and people start picking it up and they're like, that's the new thing. And they just roll with it.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. Concerns about contaminated makeup emerged late into this decade, however.
Because I'm glad.
And in fact, if you're curious, the FDA reported in 1989 that they found more than 5% of cosmetic samples collected from department store counters were contaminated with mold, fungi, and pathogenic organisms.
This tells me that I was born in the right time because I missed all that.
You did.
And fully like got the best era of cosmetics, in my opinion.
But wait, do we need to talk about lipstick gate?
No, we're not talking. No, that has been discussed ad nauseum.
It has, microscopes and all. And then, of course, the 2000s arrived. And this is kind of where the circle not ends, but we've seen all the trends and their transitions and the new products. You know, the inventiveness, I would argue, has kind of slowed down a little bit in our generation a little bit. There's a couple of products here and there where I'm like, wow, that's really new and that's really cool. But the trends just kind of ebb and flow. And there's tons of things to choose from. The thing that I would say most, which has been really good, is the diversity and price range for a lot of good, solid products. Because when I was growing up, if you got the cheap stuff, you had zero color, zero coverage, and zero hope. Okay. Nowadays, you go to like the drugstore and you're talking 10 out of 10 stuff in most cases.
Yeah. You can get a full beat from the drugstore and it looks just as good,
if not better in some cases.
If not better than the Sephora brands.
Yep.
And that is amazing to me. And I think it just provides it's a better life offering beauty environment for a lot of people.
And the good thing that I have found most in this whole era has been the pushing of personal self-care, because cosmetics goes beyond just makeup and eyeliner. Mm-hmm. It really involves taking care of your body, taking care of your mind. And a lot of people find that in simple things like doing a bath bomb once a month or something, and taking time to just do their skin prep in the morning to start their day. It doesn't need to be crazy. It just needs to be centered on you and preparing yourself for what you have to take on. And that's both for both men and women, or however you identify. If you use any of these cosmetic, or like having a perfume ritual or a specific perfume that gets you up and ready to go, like that's important.
I think that the biggest things in our, not in our lifetime necessarily, but like in our coming of age, mm-hmm. in the beauty space, mm-hmm. has one been that makeup is for everyone, not just women.
Yep.
And especially since the pandemic,
skincare,
healthcare,
self-care
is all a very wonderful and good thing that everyone should do.
Exactly. And like it or not, the cosmetics industry has done wonders for that, because it's provided and fueled the products as well as the tutorials. And even though you can't be influenced by everything, you do have to do your research and make sure that it works for you and your skin type. And your, like, some people have allergies. Like, there's, I can't use a lot of fragrances because I break out immediately. Mm-hmm. But there's so many different options for you to accomplish that. And that's what is so fantastic about the era we're currently living in.
Yep. Shade ranges have been better than ever before.
So good. And you can have, like I said, you can have top quality products at any range that you're looking at.
Yep.
So with that, the difficulty, I feel like sometimes we do like, what are the top 10 of whatever? And it's really difficult in this because cosmetics is such a big umbrella. So I happened-
the influencer has been born.
Woohoo! using his ultra superpowers. Sorry. Now I feel like we need to watch an episode of the Powerpuff Girls.
I was going to do that today, actually.
Okay, perfect. because of that, instead of like doing what are the top 10 lipsticks and blushes and whatever, I've just did a blanket statement. So what you're about to hear is the top 10. I think it's 10 because there was 36 on this list and I was not about to do all 36. Okay, you get 10. But this is the top 10 new makeup products for spring 2024. And they range in price and type. But if you want to see the full list, it is a Forbes article. And of course, it's always linked in the description. So if you want to see everything besides the 10, or if you want to, they all have links to where you can buy them too. So you can like click on it and whatever. Mm-hmm. So do that if you wish. Anyway, here's your top 10 cosmetic industry products for right now. Number one, YSL Love Shine Lip Oil Stick. Lip oils are all the rage right now. So this is a blend of 6 oils, rich fig pulp plumps lips and gives 24-hour moisture and protection. Sure. Its shade range is 20 and it's $45 per lip oil stick. Yeah, it's expensive. Also, I don't think I have a lot of, I have some experience with some products, but I don't have experience with that one. Anastasia Beverly Hills comes in at number 2 with their Beauty Balm Serum Boosted Skin Tint. This is specific.
I really want to try this.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. Okay. I really want to try this.
So this is a BB cream. Those are coming back. BB creams and CC creams kind of took a hiatus and now they're back.
I'm so here for it, by the way, because we'll talk about it. I'll stop interrupting you.
You're okay. Cause I used to use the L'Oreal one that it was really great. I think it was like Glow Pro or something. Mm-hmm. So, but they're making a comeback. And these are so easy to apply. If you have never used a BB cream or CC cream, definitely give them a try. If you're more of like a light, quick and easy kind of look, it delivers sheer to light coverage and allegedly is light as a feather. And it has hyaluronic acid microspheres. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It says in order to smooth your lines, turn back the clock, fatty acids to protect, collagen stable, blah, blah, blah. It has 16 shades, and these are flexible because in BB creams and CC creams, because it's such a light texture and color compound, you don't need to be too close to your color. You can be maybe a shade or two off. It's not that bad as a foundation, where if you have the wrong color, you're going to know exactly that you have the wrong color. And these are $42 per skin tint, which is high, but if it works, yeah, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Number three, Rare Beauty, which is also trending. Soft Pinch Luminous Powder Blush. There are two top sellers for Rare Beauty. This is one of them. And the second one is the Positive Light Silky Touch Highlighter, which was not included on this list. But if you're curious, go check it out. But basically, these two products were combined to create the Luminous Blush Powder that would meld the natural flush with gorgeous glow. It is considered transfer proof, smudge proof, water resistance, all day wear. There's six shades and it's $26, which is pretty good. It's not that bad. A number four is, I'm going to mispronounce this, so I apologize. Farah Hamidi Essential Face Compact. This is a duo designed to be used together. So there's the Smooth Veil Soft Matte meaning to be as a concealer and foundation, has kind of like that medium buildable coverage with a soft focus finish. The second step is their Shine Balm, which provides radiance. And the Power Couple is meant to enable you to customize the finish of your makeup. And there are 15 shades that you apply with their matching buffer brush. And all of that will run you $88. I didn't say this. All of this is in US dollars, by the way. So I don't know how much it is anywhere else. Number five, Dolce & Gabbana Beauty. They have a That's My Line 24-hour lasting waterproof eyeliner, which is a mouthful. Spanning periwinkle to moss green to hot pink, though, the formula will last allegedly up to 24 hours as it is smudge, humidity, and sebum proof. And sebum's your schwit. The felt tip is all flexibly or whatever it is. And you can be bold, thin, doesn't really matter. There's a lot of different colors. It's got moisturizing and smoothing, and they're $29, which is a bit much for an eyeliner. But you can get colored eyeliner at the drugstore too, so just keep that in mind.
True.
Number six is Guerlain, which the only... I don't know if this is the same for you, but the only thing Guerlain related that I think about is that gold primer that everyone was using for like a hot minute.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every influencer was using this thing. Well, they now have Meteorite Setting and Finishing Pearls of Powder, which I think it's either Neutrogena or Bare Minerals that came out with like those pearl highlighters first. It's like they're literal balls and they're like,
oh yeah,
you know what I'm talking about?
I feel
about?
Like Physician's Formula
that's
had one
it.
Too.
Yes. Yeah. The Physician's Formula one was very popular. Mm-hmm. But Guerlain, not to be outdone, has come out with their own. And it is a setting powder, allegedly, that will lock in your skin. And the handmade pearls do everything from set the makeup to color correct, illuminate, and mattify. I don't know how they illuminate and mattify. It's kind of a mixed review there for me. Mm-hmm. They last up to 12 hours of wear, and there are four shades to work with, and they're $72 a container.
Wow.
Oh, anyway, just get the Physician's Formula ones. Also, let me know how you can illuminate and mattify at the same time. Number seven, IT Cosmetics. It's not IT Cosmetics, it's IT Cosmetics, people. Your skin, but better. CC Plus Cream Natural Matte SPF 40.
If you I have that. It's good.
Oh, see. Yeah. And it's great to have an SPF in it as well. So it keeps oily skin under control without stripping it. And it is doubling as a matte foundation and sunscreen. Fantastic.
I was going to say, I use it as foundation. Mm-hmm. And it's really, it's because I know it says CC cream, but sure. It's like, it's thick enough to be a foundation.
Nice. See? 10 out of 10 review. I didn't see that it listed how many shades it has, but it is $47. So
cool. If it has good, a lot of good. Shades from okay. what I've seen on the little display thing.
Easy. Perfect. Chanel Rouge Allure Velvet Nuit Blanche. This is a lipstick, specifically a, they use this word again, a luminous matte lipstick. How? Jeez. How? I would love to know. It is limited edition. So again, we're causing franticness and scarcity with Chanel. Thanks for that. And it only has 8 shades. And the formula is supposed to last for the night. It has jojoba oil, which is actually really good, and shea butter to keep it comfortable and hydrated, even though it's a matte lipstick. And it has signature black and white click case. So that's fun. It's $50 a lipstick. So if you want to go splurge, splurge. It's limited edition. Last two, we got number 9, Dashing Diva Gel Extend Starter Kit. So this is nail related. It's again, big umbrella. You don't have to hit the salon to get nail extensions. This kit has everything you need to get similar tips to Gel X. This is not a commercial. Instead of using a UV lamp, you just cure the gel polish extensions, and they got soft gel that cure under LED light, last up to 2 weeks, blah, blah, blah. It's supposed to be really cool, magic on, magic off-y, but I will never do my own nails. I'm so sorry. I've tried. It's just not my thing. But it's $23 if you want to give it a go. Also, I don't know if it was Gel X that started this, but there was actually a trend either with Essie, OPI, or there's like another brand that's at Target. But basically, they had a no cure gel line as well. Mm-hmm. And it was like the trend.
I think they all have it now.
They all do. So you can, gel doesn't stay on my natural nails. I have very thin natural nails, which is why I usually get them done. But if it works for you, go for it. And then finally, number 10, Tatcha, the Kisu Lip Tint SPF 25, which I have heard amazing things about. And I used to love Tatcha skincare. I don't use it anymore. I have heard great things. You can protect your pucker. I don't know why they said it like that. From harmful UVA and UVB rays. It is a tinted lip balm. Comes in 3 shades. They're apparently buildable and infused with silk protein and botanical lanolin to lock in hydration. And it's $34, which for Tatcha ain't that bad, to be honest.
No.
And like I said, as you can see, it's kind of a weird umbrella of products. But now the real tea is here because we are prepared to tell you about our staple products, and they can also range from whatever, but I mostly brought makeup, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I did too.
Okay, great. If you want to talk about hair products, feel free. I could
talk about this for another hour and a half, and I feel like maybe for our coming podcast change
super
in January,
secrets.
hint, hint, cough, cough. I think we might, because
yeah, why not?
I could literally go on for 2 hours about like all the things that I've tried, all the things that I've heard good things about. You know, it's just like, I get why beauty influencers do it, because
there's
it's
so
like
much content.
So easy to talk about.
Yeah.
Right. There's so much content.
Yep.
Okay. So do you want to go first? Or do you want me to go first?
No, you go ahead. Jump in.
Okay.
They're tired of hearing me talk. Are you kidding?
All right. So I will say that I am in an era right now where I am trying to do in 2016 is when I started my makeup journey, because all the YouTubers got me into it, and I learned how to do a full beat, and I've never been the same since. But now, as I have aged, I am getting into a your skin but better phase. Like, fair. That's what I aim for myself. You know, I want to look natural, but like radiant and beautiful, you know? So I just picked like a few that I really like. It's not like a full face of makeup or anything. I will say the moisturizer that I use, I just found it and I love it. And I have like some natural redness in my skin. And this has helped hydrate my skin so much that the redness has even like gone away a little bit.
Nice.
And it's called the Vani Cream Facial Moisturizer. Nice. And it's like free of parabens, like all the stuff that, you know, you're not supposed to put on your face. And it's very good. And I've tried like the La Roche-Posay one and it wasn't as good. Mm-hmm. And also the CeraVe Daily Moisturizer as well.
Oh, I can't use that one.
It was not good. So the Vandy Cream one is my favorite right now. Nice. So I'll start with that. Then I go on with the little Dr. Jart Everyday Mineral Sunscreen and SPF 50.
Okay.
Because I want my face to be protected. And it also smells good. It smells like limes. It smells like summer.
Delicious.
Yeah, it's lovely. And then this is the best thing I've ever, like, shout out to the woman at Ulta who like gave me this recommendation because I love you and I will never go back. I have the Bare Minerals Complexion Rescue Tinted Moisturizer, and that's SPF 30 as well. Okay. So we're double SPFing, which is never a bad thing. No. And I'm in shade Opal, which is the lightest one. So
pale.
And this doesn't have like the most coverage, but I have, and I'm not someone who's like trying to hide acne or anything. I usually don't get a lot of acne. My genetics are fortunate in that way. Mm-hmm. So it's just nice to have, it's like a little something, you know, it's just a little, it covers some of the redness. And I've gotten so many compliments at work. Like 3 or 4 people have told me your skin looks flawless. It looks like you have like porcelain skin or something like that. And so I live for this. It's so good. It's my favorite thing ever. The other thing I like to use, and this is only when I put on like a full face of makeup and I'm like trying to be that girl. I do the Tarte Fake Awake liner.
Nice.
And it's like a nude liner and you put it on your lower waterline and it's supposed to make your eyes look bigger.
Nice.
For eyebrows, I like to do the NYX Thick It Stick It in Espresso.
Thick It Stick It.
And it's just basically an eyebrow gel, but it's tinted. So it gives you a little extra color.
Nice.
My favorite concealer is the Maybelline Fit Me Concealer.
Oh, nice.
And I know for those girls who are out there with the full beat, who want the full coverage, the Tarte Shape Tape, this is not for you. But I like it. Yeah. And I'm in shade 10 fair. So I'm
pale.
Yeah, it's like fair pale. That's what it is. Yeah. So anyway.
Nice. Great.
And then this, I have this lip balm that I really enjoy. I bought like 3 or 4 of these to put in like the car and, you know, my purse and like eventually I'll lose one. So there's that.
That's exactly right.
This is actually marketed for men. It is the Jack Black Intense Therapy Lip Balm and it has SPF 25 and I like the mint flavor, but that also comes in like lemon and cocoa butter, which I've tried both of those and they're not bad, but the mint one is my favorite.
But how how can you make a lip balm specific for dudes?
I don't know, but the brand it's like a male skincare brand.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's a male skincare brand. Okay. They have like shampoo and stuff for men, but this lip balm is everything.
Nice. Mm-hmm. As she puts it on her face.
Come on right now. My lips are crusty.
Slather it up.
Yeah. So I like that. And then the last thing I have is I've bought like 3 or 4 of these. This is the Essence Lash Princess False Lash Effect. It's the green one.
Nice.
And it's my favorite.
Nice.
And it's like $4.
It is like $4. Isn't that the one that Tati really likes?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was influenced.
That's okay. I get influenced by her and Michaela often.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have yet to find a product that's not good, you know?
Right. I know. That's the vibe. And that's like my, where is it? Oh, here it is. Last one.
Yeah.
I almost forgot. I have bought like 7 of these and it's the Stila all day waterproof liquid eyeliner and it's the micro tip one. So they have like the regular tip and then this is the micro tip and I'll show you because you
influencer pose. It is very small.
And I like it because I'm not a big Like, I don't like the big thick eyeliner,
yeah,
like cat eye situation, but this just adds a little something extra mm-hmm. to my eye, and it like makes my eyes look a little bit bigger without like bogging them down.
Yeah. You know? Oh, that's perfect. Do you remember when the Stila eyeshadows were all the rage as well?
Yes.
The liquid.
Yes, they're the liquid so good. I yeah. bought a couple of them and they were really good. And now they're gross and crackly. And I threw them
away. Oh, also, yes. That's a great segue, actually. If you look on your makeup products, by the way, guys, don't take my advice because I'm terrible at it. But if you look at your...
Oh, no.
If this is like the spice rack. So anyway, if you look at your product... There looks like a little can with a lid on it, and it has a number and sometimes the letter M, sometimes the letter Y. Okay. Yep. M stands for month. Y stands for year. That is when your product expires. Yes.
From when you open it.
From when you open it. Right.
Yes.
So if you buy something and then you open it and you see the little thingy thing and it says like this bronzer that I've had for the past 3 years, 12 months, then it is expired and you are using it at your own risk. And I take that risk very seriously because I'm still using it.
So, yeah. So this is what I'll say. Mm-hmm. And this is so I watch a lot of like drag queen content as well. And they like because I like to watch them put on their makeup because they use a lot more makeup than I do. And it always looks really beautiful. If you want to get yourself a little treat mm-hmm. at the grocery store or Target or like CVS or wherever you are, mm-hmm. get yourself a mascara because you have to replace it. The Essence one is every 6 months, but like they recommend it every 3 months and it's near your eyes all the time. And if you, so just get yourself a mascara. That was the best advice I picked up from a drag queen video. Specifically the Trixie Mattel, one of her makeup videos. Because it's so easy to let your mascara expire. It's going to take you forever to use it. And you don't want like your eyes to get messed up or, you know, irritated or anything like that.
And if it's a more expensive one, like the one that I use, I'd get the travel size. That way I know.
Oh, that's my other, and I'm sure this is not a revolutionary hack.
Sure.
But if you want something and it's too expensive for the full size, just get the travel size if they have it because it'll still last you the same amount. I mean, unless you're doing your makeup like literally every day, you're doing a full beat, in which case get the full size. But like for people like us who do our full makeup like once in a blue moon, you know, get yourself the travel size. It'll last you just as long and you won't be wasting a lot of product or money. So
because it's going to expire the same amount of time.
That's right.
So I agree. And also if it goes in your mouth or eyes, if it goes in either one of those things, just replace it. Like just get something new. Like don't wear lipstick that's 4 years old. Just get rid of it. Yeah, I know. It's going inside your body. Okay.
Right.
Now, of course, if you have skin conditions, just be careful with the powders, but I haven't really noticed a lot. They might just not last as long. I've noticed that. But hey, that's my
risk.
Again,
like do what works for you, obviously. Right.
You
know, everyone's skin is very different.
Yes.
Oh, the other little hack, if you have the money to do it. Mm-hmm. Or somebody gives you like a spa gift card. Mm-hmm. It was really cool. I got a facial in January and it was, and like technically you're supposed to do it like every 6 months or whatever. I got one because I like to treat myself. I'm not usually a facial girly or a massage girly. Like, but the lady who did my facial gave me a lot of like recommendations on what kind of products I should be getting. So she was like, your skin is really great, but it's very dehydrated. Mm-hmm. So I would up the ante on your moisturizer and maybe exfoliate once a week.
Yeah.
And just call it a day. And I was like, great. That's beautiful. That's lovely skincare advice. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously if you go to a dermatologist, like do that.
Sure.
But like, if you need a little direction in like what kind of skincare products you need, go get a facial. They'll tell you what to do.
Yeah. And go to those experts because I know it's easy to get influenced, but you don't necessarily know what kind of skin type they have that's compared to yours. So better to get it like firsthand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, again, we don't really know what we're talking about. So just be mindful of that as well. Do your research. Have a grain of salt with all that
personal
information. Yeah.
Yeah. It's literally all personal.
That's what's worked for us.
Yeah. I use all the Real like, because I am acne prone. And speaking of being influenced, Michaela used Real. I don't know if she still does, but she used it for a while. And honestly, it's been so simple and so perfect. And that's the other thing. You don't usually need a lot to your skincare. Mm-hmm. It just needs to be suitable to your skin.
Yeah.
But I also recently integrated something that I don't know if I'm going to rebuy. I might try actually the one that you have for the SPF, but I recently tried the Sunray C Clearly SPF, and it has like hydrating facial SPF plus Kinetin. I don't really know, but it's supposed to be really good. It's SPF 35. It's a gel, which I have to do because I break out easily. Mm-hmm. And it's not sticky. And this particular one, if you have sensitivities or if you are, I don't know, apparently vegan, this one is water resistant, vegan, and reef safe. So when you wash it off your face, it's not like Dawn dish soap or any other kind of dish soap. Not that just calling Dawn out, they all have it, but it's like the triclosan. Remember, we used to do those experiments.
Yeah.
So it's like safe to be washed out into like the storm drains and things like that. So,
oh, nice.
Yes. You know, it's been good, but it's expensive. It was $85.
Oh, and it's cheaper than that.
Right. And it's 1.7 fluid ounces.
Ooh.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been good. You don't need a lot, but it is expensive.
Yeah. I've also heard mineral sunscreens are better for your skin than like the regular sunscreen. So take that with a grain of salt as well.
Also, mascara is one of my biggest things. Mascara and concealer are the two things that I wear most often. And mine is the Monsieur Big from Lancome.
Nice.
This was an influence from Kathleen Lights way back when. And I have since then never used another mascara. This one is just the goat for me. Combined with the Instant Age Rewind Eraser Concealer by Maybelline.
I love that one's a good one. Yeah.
Which is really good.
Yeah.
They also have a foundation, which is okay. It's not bad. I'm recently trying out a new foundation by Kosas that's a BB cream that I actually love 10 times more than the Maybelline one. So what have you. And then also two more things for me. The Fenty Beauty Diamond Balm, I use that as eyeshadow and as highlighter. And I have to say, it's glitter central. So if you do not like glitter, don't get it. But it is so soft and so sparkly, and I can use it all over my face, and I love it. And then I also recently tried Polite Society setting powder. I will never go back. It is literally the best setting powder I have used since, like, what was that one that was super popular? Coty Airspun.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Everybody loved Coty Airspun. This is 1,000 times what polite this is. Like, Polite Society is 10 times, 10 times, 1,000 times, 1,000 times. I cannot say enough. It has been the best 4 days of my life with this stupid powder.
Oh my God. She's marrying the powder. Tyler is getting the powder.
And I'm just to like, I've used all of them. I've used one size. I've used that one. I've used the Fenty one. I've used Huda. I've used the Coty Airspun. I've used anything you can possibly think of. I've used, what is Bare Minerals? There was also another one that was super popular, Charlotte Tilbury.
Wow. You go through the powder, girl.
Laura Mercier. I've used it all. And I can tell you from my experience, Polite Society has knocked every single one of them out of the park. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I will stand on that. I stand on business.
Yes, ma'am.
That's what I would say. Also, unrelated, wear a bonnet to bed. Boy, girl, long hair, short hair, wear a bonnet to bed, please. Or at least get a silk pillowcase for your poor follicles, okay?
Yes.
It's acceptable. And
it's okay if it falls off during the night.
It's okay. Just wrap that bitch down. It's fine. But it's definitely needed for your hair health, okay? Mm-hmm. Okay, everyone. Anyway,
yes, mom.
That's my soapbox. Wear a bonnet, okay? That's all I have.
Okay, wonderful. Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, That wraps up our extra long episode of Meteor Content. I'm pretty sure it's going to be like an hour and 45 minutes, but here
gorgeous.
We are. Feel free to send us an email with any questions, comments, concerns, or episode topic suggestions at mediocrecontentpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram or TikTok at the exact same handle that you just heard me say. And no Twitch for right now. We'll let you know when that comes back. And rate us 5 stars anywhere you listen to podcasts, because we love you and we deserve it. And we'll see you next week.
This has been Mediocre Content.
Thanks so much for listening. Cheers.
Cheers.